And we're going out to you via the transmitter at 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of This Changes Everything, Tuesday, February 9th, 6:30 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center Auditorium in Portland. This Changes Everything is a film directed by Avi Lewis and inspired by Naomi Klein's international bestseller of the same title that attempts to reimagine the vast challenge of climate change.
I've spent 6 years wandering through the wreckage caused by the carbon in the air and the economic system that put it there.
There will also be information and representatives from local groups involved in the climate change struggle. Again, that's Tuesday, February 9th, 6:30 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center Auditorium, 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The 18th Annual Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, a national town hall discussion on poverty and homelessness in America.
I think it would be pretty startling for the majority of the public to know that within about two blocks from the White House itself, there are homeless people sleeping in parks.
This year, we'll be live from the streets of Washington, D.C. That's the Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, coming to you soon and heard right here on this radio station.
This station is KBOO Portland. Hear the Homelessness Marathon live beginning at 5 p.m. Wednesday, February 17th, and continuing until 6 a.m. Thursday morning.
Well, good morning. This show is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fagrang. And today we're going to kind of go back in time a ways. We're going to go back to 1949 when Syria, the president of Syria, who was a man named Shukri al-Kuwatli. And he'd been elected in 1943. And then he was re-elected in 1948. And he was a secular guy. He was not a, well, he was a Muslim, but he was not extremist or anything. Democratically elected. And he, but the U.S. Took a dislike to Mr. Kuwatli. For two main reasons. One is he opposed what they call the Trans-Arabian Pipeline. Now, this is an oil pipeline that went from the Persian Gulf across Arabia into Syria. And at that time, it was going to come out, I believe, in Israel, in Haifa. And then it would provide oil to Europe. But Shukri al-Kuwatli opposed that, and he also allowed the Communist Party to exist in Syria. And this is why he was overthrown. He was overthrown by the United States, and one diplomat, a man named Dean Hinton, who was at the embassy in Syria, said that this was the dumbest, got the quote right here. He said that this was the stupidest, most irresponsible action a diplomatic mission like ours could get itself involved in, and that we started a series of these things that will never end. And because of that, Dean Hinton was kind of kept out of the loop and was ostracized. Well, the USA installed a different president. His name was Husni al-Zaim. 8 years before, he'd been imprisoned for graft, but now the U.S. put him in as president, and lo and behold, he approved the pipeline, and he began rounding up communists and other leftists. He's also kind of a very unlikable, arrogant character, and 5 months later, he was overthrown and shot. 4 months after that, his successor was overthrown. And then another successor was overthrown a few years later. Then in 1955, al-Kuwaitli returned and was elected president of Syria again. Alan Dulles, the CIA chief, was very displeased. So the U.S. and Britain plotted another coup. And they were going to have the plot involve fake border incidents and riots and whatever, and they created a, quote, Free Syria Committee, and they had a hit list of military leaders. There were three main people on the hit list. Two were military leaders, and one was the leader of the Communist Party. Well, that coup was exposed. It never happened, but Syria continued in a very unstable manner. For a while, they joined Egypt and a kind of the United Arab Republic, but that ended. Finally, in 1970, Hafez Assad took over, and of course, he ruled until he died many years later, and he passed the ruling power on to his son, Bashar. So that was Syria. Let's skip a few years ahead to Iran in 1953. At that time, it was run by a secular Democrat named Mohammad Mossadegh, and he committed the sin of nationalizing the oil company, and for that he was overthrown by the CIA. And the overthrow, it involved a lot of false flag bombings that were blamed on communists and a lot of propaganda that was planted in the media. And this is seen as a blueprint for later events in Guatemala in 1954 and the Bay of Pigs in 1961. But anyway, Mossadegh was overthrown and the Shah was brought back to sit on the what they call the peacock throne. And he ruled Iran for a number of years. So that was 53. 1959, Iraq was ruled by a military man named Abdel Karim Qasem. A few years before, he and other military men had overthrown the British-imposed king. Qasem was... according to some Iraqi friends, that he was the last honest leader their country had ever had. But he ticked off the U.S., mainly because he was not harsh enough with he was too friendly with the communists. So the CIA, they put together a six-man hit team to assassinate Qasem. One of them was a young thug named Saddam Hussein. And they set him up in an apartment on Al-Rashid Street, which is right across the street from where Qasem worked. And they opened fire on him as he was leaving one afternoon. And this particular plot failed. Saddam Hussein escaped. The CIA got him to... helped him get to Lebanon, and then to we wound up in Cairo. And while living in Cairo, he was often a visitor at the U.S. Embassy. He liked to hang out and play dominoes in a few bars. And they also, I heard that he was going to law school, of all things. Anyway, he stayed in Cairo until 1963. And this time the Baathists were able to overthrow Karim Qasem. They shot him. And the CIA provided the Baathists with a hit list of leftists to get rid of. And so Saddam was sort of in charge of internal security, and then he later became the ruler of Iraq. We'll skip ahead, take a brief detour to Indonesia in 1965. There was a massacre of 250,000, at least, leftists by the dictator Suharto with U.S. support. And guess what? The U.S. gave Suharto a list of communists to kill, as many as 5,000 of them. Then we'll go move ahead a little more to Afghanistan in 1979. At that time, Afghanistan was sort of a neutral, or more or less an ally of the Soviet Union. And Zbigniew Brzezinski had the bright idea to get rid of this secular government. It wasn't democratic, but it was secular. And so Brzezinski's bright idea was to arm these radical Islamic people. And sort of this would give the Soviets a taste of what a Vietnam quagmire was like. And these radical Islamists that the U.S. armed included al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. And that succeeded. Brzezinski, even later on, he was very proud of what he'd done. His idea was that, strategy of arming the Islamists, it gave the Soviets, it sort of took the Soviets down a peg, and it helped liberate Eastern Europe. Brzezinski was from Poland, and he thought that liberating Poland and Eastern Europe was worth what he called a few, quote, stirred-up Muslims. Also in 1979, the Shah of Iran was overthrown by the Ayatollah Khomeini. That happened in 1979. And once again, the U.S. supplied Khomeini with a hit list of communists and leftists to get rid of. One CIA man comparing Iraq to Iran, he's talking about Iran, he was quoted as saying all 4,000 of his communists suddenly got killed. Well, we sort of, demonized Khomeini, but at the same time, we were doing business with him. One item of business was the Iran-Contra affair, and the way that worked was that the U.S. Sold arms to the Islamic Republic of Iran, not directly, but via Israel. And then with the money from Iran, they gave that to the Sandinistas to, for their counter-revolution there. And that also involved a lot of drugs coming into this country. But basically what we were doing was we were palling up to the Islamic Republic of Iran in order to fight a secular government in Nicaragua. Well, do we see a pattern here? I think we do. The pattern is that the U.S. Had this strong urge to get rid of leftists of all kinds. It just happened in one country after another. And at first, the U.S. favored strongmen, military rulers, like Saddam Hussein. But later, the favored people were included the radical Islamics. And in a way, this is similar to in Israel, Ariel Sharon helped, he supported Hamas because his reasoning was that Hamas, they were religious people, and they wouldn't be as big a trouble as the Palestine Authority that which was secular. Well, that turned out to be wrong. So we see this pattern of U.S. involvement here. You know, the U.S. sort of claims this divine right to change regimes at will. So they wanted, you know, their first thing was get rid of leftists, put out the hit lists. The overthrows, the plots involved a lot of lies and phony pretexts. And what happened in Syria was that, you know, the Trans-Arabia pipeline is back in vogue again. This time they're talking about in the meantime, since it was first used in Syria, it kind of fell into disuse and was discontinued. And now there's talk with all the trouble in Syria now that maybe there is another chance for the Trans-Arabia pipeline. This time it would go, as before, from the Persian Gulf, and it would go through Islamic State territory, kind of in the border of Syria and Iraq. So anyway, back to Syria. We have, you know, an ongoing civil war there right now. And it was very interesting. There was a cable that was exposed by WikiLeaks in which one of the U.S. diplomats in Syria reported on ways of getting rid of the Syrian government. This fellow, his name was William Roebuck, and he was a deputy chief of the Syria mission from 2004 to 2006. So you can see that this happened well before the rebellion in Syria that is ongoing today, which sort of most people think of that as happening in around the year 2011. And so this was certainly in the works or talked about long before that. And then we also have General Wesley Clark, who after, I guess sometime right after 9/11 in the year 2001, he was at the Pentagon, and he reported how some Pentagon friend of his said that there was a plot in the works to overthrow something like 7 governments in 5 years. Of course, Iran, Iraq were on them, so was Syria, Libya, and Lebanon. So whatever the source of the current civil war in Syria was, we know that it has certainly been talked about long before that. And this secret cable, which was revealed by WikiLeaks, was published in a website called the Hedge, Zero Hedge. And it goes into detail. I mean, there were different ways of kind of propaganda efforts that would happen and possible action. So there we are. We have this pattern, and we can see what the results are now. We see that the Islamic State is in charge. The democratic leftists, secular leftists, have been kind of taken off the board. And that is why we're dealing with groups like Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. There's really not a whole lot of difference between them as far as I'm concerned. They are, you know, they chop off heads and they rule. They rule in this very harsh version of Wahhabi Islamic religion. and they brought death and destruction to the Middle East. But somehow the U.S. seems to prefer them to democratic, leftist, secular rulers. We just see this in the history. And what is happening now is that refugees are flooding Europe and really destroying the European Union. The open borders are not working for the Europeans now. It's one thing to take in, to take in refugees, just sort of a moral duty. But when there's that many of them, it becomes more and more difficult to do. So that is a result of this kind of maneuvering that the U.S. has done. And so you have to ask, are our leaders stupid or what? Well, one person, Lord David Owen, who is a British diplomat, he had a very nice phrase. It was mentioned a few shows ago when I interviewed Mike Lofgren, who wrote a book about the deep state. He quoted David Owen as saying that the U.S. is kind of ruling, and he called it, quote, hubristic incompetence. And to me, that is a very nice phrase. It just really describes our leaders. Caller came in and said that the Contras, not the Sandinistas, were financed by the CIA. I hope I made that clear. The Sandinistas were the objects of this overthrow. The CIA, yes, the CIA was funding the Contras, who were basically a death squad democracy, and they did it via this Iran-Contra connection, where the U.S. bought weapons, and or they helped Israel buy weapons and ship them to Iran, and the Iranians, mullahs that we like to gripe about, returned the favor by sending money to the Contras to overthrow the Sandinistas. So if anybody wants to call in with a question or a comment, the phone number is 503-231-8187. Well, we have to wonder about our leaders. Like I said, are they stupid or what are they? Well, hubristic incompetence is, I think, a really great term. And we are a superpower, and it's sort of been my experience and sort of through history that people with a lot of power, they don't really have much need to be smart or intelligent because their power can crush their opposition, and they get used to that. They sort of can dispense with the smarts, and they become really kind of arrogant. And I would say our leaders, opinion makers, are, we talk about American exceptionalism. Well, I would say that our leaders are exceptionally arrogant. They are, to use an old phrase there, America is too full of itself. They think that they know the answer to everything. This is brought out, last year I interviewed James Bradley, who wrote a book called The China Mirage. And it was, I think it's a really good book worth reading, and it came out of nowhere. James Bradley, his father had been one of the military people who raised the flag at Iwo Jima. Well, he started doing research on China and how the U.S. are top diplomats who, in those days, they came from Ivy League universities. They were the so-called best and brightest, but they're completely ignorant of what was really going on in China. And this goes back to the 20s and the 30s. They thought that the only China they knew were the seaport cities that were basically run by the colonial powers, and the Americans and the missionaries sort of had their idea that they fervently believed that China, the Chinese peasants, were yearning for Christianity. So between this busy commerce and the seaports and the missionaries' delusion about Christianity, our diplomats really thought that they wound up supporting nationalist General Chiang Kai-shek and his landlord pals. And so, but they were so deluded about that you know, and these were the best and brightest. And of course, the whole China policy was a big collapse. So we see that similar thing. This has not ended. So we have a caller on the line. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. Jenny.
Hi. I think that your understanding and is very astute and very well articulated. And if you fast forward to today, I just don't think that it could be overstated that these people now who are running for national offices are just thoroughly corrupted by money.
Are you talking
and
about
I don't know how, because it's the only thing that explains their idiocy, their stupidity, perceived. Maybe they're just towing the line of the people who are funding them, because mm-hmm. you cannot believe, I mean, it's a mockery.
I assume you're talking about our candidates here in our election.
Yeah, Trump, mm-hmm. Cruz, you know, and prior mm-hmm. to that, Palin, and you know, and the Clintons, I got to say, they're not that far from that corruption
I
themselves.
Think Hillary Clinton is very warlike. She was, you know, she voted for the Iraq War, and she was very much in favor of the overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya. And in fact, she really kind of laughed over him being killed, you know.
Yeah. Haiti, her involvement in Haiti.
Oh, yes. That you know, that is a story. I would like to go into that some more sometime. Is the Clintons, what they have done to Haiti over the years. It's really, it's terrible.
It's criminal, really.
Well, you know, you could say it's partly, I think it's sure, it's money involved, but also I think it's sort of the mindset, you know, because a lot of the voters, they go right along with this. They've been taught all through school and by all the news media
Well, they're not thinking very much because, or they're not learning anything because you cannot believe that stuff. If you take the time to consider these issues thoughtfully, you're not going to wind up believing in Ted Cruz. He's a lunatic.
Well,
I mean,
I think he
is really nuts.
I think he's worse than Trump myself.
I don't know how you can get much worse, but yeah, he is, you know.
Well, strange.
I mean, really, these people are a joke. If you talk to people outside this country, they're wondering what in the hell is going on here.
Well, strange to say, Donald Trump has made a few remarks. He's so off the wall, it's hard to say what he really believes, but he has made a few remarks saying that he could deal with Putin, and that which involves actually dealing, you know, not just threatening. And he sort of doesn't think we should apparently not get that involved in the Syrian war. So, but all the others, including now Hillary Clinton, as far as the Syrian war goes, she wants to panacea is clear the skies, you know, which involves shooting down Russian planes, which I don't know if that's occurred to her. But
probably shooting down anything has occurred to her. You know, it seems like. But I wouldn't trust anything that Trump said, you know, frankly, whether it's about Syria or anything else. But I'm sorry, I was going to say something about his, something he said here. I'm sorry, but I just don't know how, for me, it's Sanders or bust.
Yeah, well, he's not that great on foreign policy either, but he is better than these others. So,
well, his domestic policy, you can at least, you know, he's not going to keep us in the vice grip that we currently operate in financially, I don't think.
Well, I hear my music playing. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
And I just remarked that here we are, you know, pushing democracy abroad, but we seem to be losing it at home. Now, isn't that a kick in the pants? Anyway, stay tuned for Air Cascadia on KBOO, your radio station.
All right. Thank you very much, Pear. Fight the Empire on KBOO Portland. About a minute now before 10 o'clock, and we're about 15 minutes away from starting Flashpoints. Actually, no, not Flashpoints. It is off today. Instead, we're going to hear Law and Disorder. On today's show, Vince Warren, Executive Director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, discusses his trip to Palestine. And Todd Pierce, a retired Army attorney, talks about American militarism and how military rule has caused the degeneration of principles within the U.S. Constitution. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Lisa Loving speaks with writer Alifair Burke, that is, about her new suspense novel, The X. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Rosemary Reed Miller discusses her book, Threads of Time, The Fabric of History, which profiles African-American dressmakers and designers from 1850 to the present. That's all coming up right after we hear from Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia next on KBOO. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual Portland Bob Marley Birthday Party, Saturday, February 6th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom in Portland. The life of Bob Marley will be celebrated with live reggae by Simba Puma and the Roaring Lions, by DJs Reggae Bob and Pablo One from Kingston, Jamaica, and live streaming from Kingston's own Bob Marley Festival. Again, that's the first annual Portland Bob Marley Birthday Party, Saturday, February 6th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom at 615 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.